This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 194. Today, CJ and I are doing a quick little review of the first day of the Build keynote live from the Seattle, Washington Conference Center on May the 10th, 2017.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, and the competitive landscape and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
Send us a tweet, either to the show at MS Cloud Show, or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
Or Chris at LoungeFlyZ.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on valid.nl.
Hey CJ, how's it going?
Better than the Azure AD team.
Oh man, that was a little bit of a fire going on a minute ago, wasn't it?
Oh dear, yeah. So first I am at Build, obviously. The Build conference is on in Seattle right now. We're at the Washington State Convention Center with, I don't know, probably 4,500 folks. First day, we've gone through keynotes this morning. Right after the keynotes, I had some alarm bells come on in our monitoring system for Hyperfish, and our team looked into it, and sure enough, Azure Active Directory login, which powers Microsoft Teams, Office 365, the Azure portal, the whole nine yards, was dead on arrival, 504s. So
yeah. I guess somebody
at Microsoft
was
having a bad day.
Yeah. Microsoft was down.
It was down, fully down. It was totally dead. So It's back online now, but I bet there were pucker factor went to 12 for all the session presenters prepping their demos for this afternoon sessions.
Yep, that's I had that happen actually last November. So I was presenting, and all of a sudden I couldn't get into Office 365 I could not do Exchange Online went down. And I was trying to fight with it. Someone raises their hand and they're like, Exchange Online just went down. It's all over Twitter. I'm like, oh, well, that's fun. So there goes that part of the demo. So thankfully it was only down for a few minutes, but any rate.
Still brutal. What a day. Any day is bad for login to go down, I guess, but especially for all the demos and presenters.
Absolutely, yeah. So, hey, today you are at Build live in Seattle. I am at home over in Florida. And we wanted to just take a few minutes here and kind of recap what we saw for the keynote today and a quick little, out of band episode that we want to go through and publish as quick as we can. And I'll try and get this out later on today. But we wanted to just kind of cover some of the stuff, offer some of our thoughts, some of the bigger things here that were announced or at least discussed at the keynote. So I think we're just going to dive right into it.
Yep, that sounds great.
All right, so I guess the first thing we had was a bunch of stats that that Satya Nadella mentioned. Some things were a little we'd seen before, but 100 million Office 365 monthly active users, 140 million monthly active users on Cortana, 12 million organizations are in Azure AD, so 12 million people were a little frustrated a minute ago. 90% of the Fortune 500.
It was 10 million organizations.
Oh, I thought it was 12. Oh, I said it was 12 million organizations.
Organizations, sorry. Yes. Yeah, organizations, yeah. Not people. Yep.
Right. And then 90% of the Fortune 500s are using the Microsoft Cloud. So Microsoft, just an update on stats there.
Yeah, really interesting stats. Yeah.
Yeah. I did think, I guess overall, before we do this, I did think that the keynote today was significantly better than both the keynotes last year. I was really inspired by, there are probably four big demos that I know that I'm going to pick out that I thought were some of my favorite things that we saw today. Yeah. And I'll get you to chime in on yours as well. But I think the first thing that we saw was a talk about Azure IoT Edge, a new thing that was showing some stuff off. Idea was basically to be able to have it run on Windows and Linux and be able to essentially enable cloud functionality to be exported and run and managed not just from Azure, but exported down and run on the IoT devices themselves. What did you think about this?
Yeah, so in a nutshell, it's an on-prem connector, right? It's the Azure team and Microsoft saying, hey, IoT happens on-prem a lot, and you can't afford for the cloud to disappear if you've got offline scenarios or the network goes down or what have you, and some stuff just needs to be on-prem. So I thought it was an interesting development. I think AWS has something similar in the space for deploying and being able to run like Lambdas and things like that locally for IoT scenarios. So it's kind of a response to that, I feel. But yeah, really interesting development. I guess for me, it was like a bit of a capitulation on Microsoft's part to say, hey, the cloud is only part of the story. You're going to have on-prem stuff. We need to stretch the cloud, at least in a connectivity sense, to code that runs on premises as well for the foreseeable future. And this is kind of their foot in the door on that stuff.
Yeah, it seemed like a bit of a, not so much, not like an Azure Stack kind of an offering, but for devices that are going to be running, that need to do things, they need like monitor certain things like pumps or I guess in the demo we saw was a piece of machinery that when it runs outside of a certain threshold, they need to do an emergency shutdown on it. And if the cloud isn't available, they can't have this $1 million piece of machinery basically just fry itself because it can't act on its own. And so at least giving a little bit of that health check and monitoring stuff and reaction to the device, but still, you know, relying on the cloud for the majority of the processing and stuff of all the analytics.
Yeah, exactly. And they gave the scenario of a ship out at sea as well. Mm. And even though satellite connectivity is good in those scenarios, there's situations where, you know, there'll be a storm at sea and they lose satellite connectivity to the internet. And it'd be really bad if there were a whole bunch of processes that couldn't be run on the ship because of that.
Yeah, that's true. It's very true. While many IT teams struggle with the impact of deploying Office 365, Zscaler customers are experiencing 40% or greater network performance across file download times, as well as TCP and DNS connection times, compared to using next-gen firewalls and UTMs to route Office 365 traffic locally to the internet. While you may know Zscaler as the leader in cloud security, they also have hundreds of customers who are processing over 1.2 petabytes of Office 365 traffic monthly through the Zscaler cloud. Visit www.zscaler.com to learn more.
Yeah.
So the next thing that we saw was they called it digitizing the workspace. And I know this was a lot of using some of the AI stuff and the vision API they have in cognitive services that they did, where they showed a mock workspace of like a spot like out like a work site, construction site on stage. And they showed how it was able to identify different elements on the screen or in the picture, like a jackhammer or an individual or something like that, and how it could do certain detection of different issues and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was really cool. That was a really nice showcase of the sort of technology being used in a real world scenario that didn't totally suck. You know, like the HoloLens demos, when they first came out with HoloLens, there's a guy or a woman, can't remember which, working on some jet engine and it was all sort of exploded. And I was like, yeah, I mean, I get it, but it's not exactly that practical. Whereas this demo was really, you know, I definitely had a sense of real of practicality to it, which I thought was great.
Yeah, something that could be applied today to actually impact people's lives or businesses actually applied today and used today, not showing an alien coming and spiders coming out of a wall that I can shoot with my HoloLens or something.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And although it was a little creepy, that demo, where the demoer, added a rule that said, you know, jackhammers should not be left standing up. They should be laid down. And then the system detected, you know, using the vision APIs and all that, detected when the jackhammer was left, you know, propped up against a wall in an unsafe position. And then it sort of automatically sent an alert to some worker saying, hey, could you lie that jackhammer down? And all I could think of was like, wow, I bet they're going to be stoked about this technology telling them how to do their job.
Yeah, Big Brother at its best.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was a little creepy like that, but really, yeah, very practical and applicable.
Yeah, agreed. The next one that we saw, I thought that was one of my top four, you know, things that I saw during the keynote today. I thought that was really impressive to show real world, you know, technology being used and applicable today. The next one though that we saw was something called Project Emma, and this one blew my mind. A woman from London who suffers from Parkinson's, and a Microsoft researcher. They essentially showed how they developed a device that was very much like a thick smartwatch that if you're familiar with like noise cancellation technology where you know you have an inverse of like the sound wave cancel it out. And I'm not saying this is what they did, but effectively it did that. So she was able to draw a box and write her name without, I guess, the impact of tremors affecting her handwriting.
Yeah, I thought that was just incredible. I was seeing in the keynote and I was like, oh gosh, I've managed. Oh no, I seem to have got a piece of dust in my eye. Oh, I wonder how that happened.
Yeah.
Because it was, I think Satcha's overall point with that was, this is technology actually impacting real people's lives in a great way, right? To the benefit of humans, and you know, not just because you can, but because you should, you know.
Yeah, and I just watched, actually right before we recorded this, I just watched Seth Juarez from Channel 9 interview the Microsoft researcher who worked on this and the woman that was the subject of the demo, Emma. And they did a cool little interview. She is planning on, she says that she finds herself drawing more. She's a creative director, so it's hard to go through and express yourself when you can't draw. And she was saying how she finds that she's drawing more now just because she can and it's an enabling technology. And she's planning on doing a 365-day video blog or blog on her experience showing how this is impacting her life and everything. So that is so cool. It was so cool. It was this I think was my favorite demo just because it showed, and my favorite part of the keynote because it was so inspiring. It was really cool to see, you know, stuff that Microsoft is doing changing someone's life for the better.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. So the next thing was the Scott Goo show, and he busted out with a bunch of stuff. I'll throw a couple of these at you because we're going to try and keep this episode quick, and I'll let you kind of, or as quick as we can.
Yeah.
I'll throw a couple of these out at you. I'll let you kind of comment on some, and then we'll throw a few more out, and I'll, you know, kind of go back and forth. So the first thing that he talked about was two big things for Azure. Number one was the Cloud Shell, which was basically taking the Azure CLI, cross-platform CLI, and it now runs in a Bash web-based console right inside of the Azure portal and a Azure mobile portal, which is effectively a Android and iOS application that allows me to, it's the portal, but it's in a mobile app. It works great for that form factor, and it's got the Cloud Shell integrated inside of it.
Yeah, the shell was really cool. If you haven't used the Azure CLI, definitely go check out version 2 of it. It's all Python based now. It runs, obviously does a lot of what V1 did, but it kind of does it better. But yeah, they've managed to get that running in a Docker container in Azure, obviously. And when you open up the Cloud Shell through the portal, you get an HTTP based, you know, web based Bash shell that is already pre-authenticated with your Azure subscription and so forth, so you can just start typing commands straight away and you're in. I thought that was really sweet.
Yeah, I loved it. I'm a big fan of the CLI. I mean, I like the Azure portal. I do not care too much for PowerShell. It's not me. Of course, it's not until just recently that it actually works cross-platform, but it's still, I mean, I'm not as much of a fan of it. But at any rate, I like the fact that, you know, it's very cool that we have this inside of the Azure portal so that I can run my scripts, or I can, you know, create 1,000 VMs if I want to create 1,000 VMs like they demonstrated. But man, I grabbed the iOS app, fired it right away, started playing with it, and was absolutely, I mean, I could jump right in. I had forgotten that I was supposed to check to see if 2 VMs shut down last night. I'm like, well, let me just use the app to do it. And sure enough, worked right away.
Very nice.
So very, very impressed with it.
Really nice.
Yeah,
it'll make it good. It just takes one of those extra steps out of getting set up with a CLI. You can just open the browser, log into your portal, boom, open up the shell, and you're away.
And you're all good. Yep.
Yeah.
So the next things we talked about were a little bit of database kind of stuff. I guess there was a announcing general availability for Visual Studio for the Mac, which included snapshot debugging. But then we had some database or some data announcements.
Some big ones.
Some really big ones. Literally. SQL Server 2017 is gone GA and shipping, and it releases at the same time on Windows, Linux, and Docker. There's a new data migration service for zero downtime migration to take your SQL Server databases and move them to Azure. And a new database as a service options, hosted MySQL, hosted PostgreSQL, and Azure Cosmo DB, which is the first globally distributable multi-model database service that is horizontally scalable, paid for, consumption only. It's basically, it's a superset of what we could have done with DocumentDB. In fact, it is DocumentDB. It's a new name because all of our DocumentDB databases have been migrated automatically over to Cosmos DB.
Yeah, that was obviously the real big one. SQL Server 2017, pretty cool. We knew that was coming. Linux, Docker, and Windows support, obviously, really nice. Postgres and MySQL, that's really interesting because that means that, you know, a bunch of startups and a bunch of companies that are building applications that want to use free databases, you know, have that support in AWS for MySQL and Postgres, and now can do it on Azure in a similar kind of way. So that's really nice. And then obviously Cosmos DB, honestly, it was a really cool announcement, but in some ways I think it's DocumentDB renamed. And I think a lot of people don't understand what DocumentDB is because of the name document in it. Mm. I think people expect you to upload files into it and it's like some sort of file share. And that's not the case. It's documents, but it's JSON documents, right? Mm. And in a NoSQL sense. So I actually think they've done themselves a great service by wrapping this up as Cosmos DB, rebranding, adding some more APIs around graph type APIs to call it, to integrate with other things. You've got obviously Mongo API support for it, and some new APIs to get access to it. So I think it's really cool. I love the whole geo-redundant and replicated stuff, and leaving the developer in control of the trade-offs you make. Do you want, you know, because multi-master, geo-redundant, and replicated data is really a very tough problem, and you have to make a trade-off. You have to decide, do you want it to be fast, or do you want it to be accurate? And Microsoft are letting you control some of that and saying, if you want it really, really fast, you can't also have it accurate in real time, but if you want it accurate absolutely, then, you know, reads and writes are going to be a little slower.
Yeah, I agree. I'm a little confused a little bit on what Cosmos DB is, why it's so much better than DocumentDB, aside from some really, you know, some really good service level agreements, some SLAs that they provide for high availability, performance on latency and throughput and data consistency. But I mean, I guess to me, I need to learn a little bit more about it. The keynote, it wasn't as descriptive on why is this so impressive, or why is this such a great thing that I didn't have before. So it's, I mean, it is a NoSQL database like what DocumentDB is or was. It's not relational. I was trying to compare it to Google's big announcement a couple of weeks ago of their new Spanner offering, but Spanner is relational. So it's kind of like Spanner is what we have with SQL or Azure SQL Server. And so we'll have to see. Well, I'd like to get the person, I believe her name was Rima, who presented it. I'd love to get her on the podcast in the future to talk a little bit more and highlight what Cosmos DB is all about.
Yeah, I mean, in the demo, if you saw when they created one of these new ones, the Azure portal, they were creating a DocDB. You know, they go in, they give it a name, and it was .documents.azure.whatever it was. So I suspect it's just the, you know, I think it's just the evolution of DocDB with some additional APIs on top of it and a rebranding. And, you know, but having said that, it was pretty nice. The Explorer, the data Explorer that they showed was pretty smooth. The geo redundancy and deployment UI for picking your regions and things was really smooth. And obviously the API support, being able to bring developers from whatever ecosystem across is super important for adoption. So.
Yep.
If it is just DocumentDB growed up, that's fine. And I think it'll help with the confusion by renaming it something too.
Yeah, agreed. What if you could take any process your teams use to get work done and make it happen automatically? What if you could save countless hours and help people work better together? Nintex can make that happen. With the Nintex platform, work flows from person to person, system to system, to the cloud and back, and it flows in and out of the tools that you use every day. With Nintex, work flows so your teams can work smarter, work faster, and be more connected than ever. The next thing we had was, I think we can kind of skip over this kind of quick, is that Visual Studio announcements. You had Visual Studio 2017 for Mac. It went GA. I think I mentioned that a minute ago.
Yeah.
But then the other part was Visual Studio, I guess the big 25 gig one, is that for Windows, integrated Docker tooling, support for Azure Functions and Logic apps. And then also, I guess this wasn't so much Visual Studio. To me, this wasn't a Visual Studio thing, but they grouped it in there, and that's Application Insights, Azure App Insights for Azure Functions. So those are, I'm interested to play with that a bit. Yeah, I'm looking forward to putting those on, putting App Insights on the Azure Functions I've got, just kind of see what kind of metrics we get out of that.
Yeah, really nice.
The next big thing, though, that we hit, and this contained the next two kind of demos for me, was around, it was all artificial intelligence, the AI and research stuff and cognitive services. This to me was really slick. So we saw one demo where they used the Vision, Vision API to help like train, do like very easy training for like classifying images. So the demo that they had was, they had a bunch of images of different tree leaves or plant leaves that they had already classified and said, you know, this is a rhododendron, this is a pine tree, this is an oak tree, palm tree, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then they took a picture and uploaded it to the service, and it said with X amount of confidence, I believe that this is a rhododendron.
Right? Yeah.
Really
slick.
Yeah,
custom training AI models for photos in this case. Really cool. Really useful for all sorts of things, I guess. Like, they call these things custom services. So
skills.
So was it skills, custom services, or skills?
Yeah.
And being able to sort of train your model, you know, upload a bunch of photos and tell it, you know, help it understand what they are, and then have it answer based on that. It's really nice.
Yeah, I played with it a little bit already. It's a public preview. I created an instance of it, uploaded a few pictures of different African cichlids, which are a kind of fish, and classified them with their names. And then I took a picture of two or three of the fish from my fish tank and then uploaded it. And I was really surprised at how quickly it was able to go through I was able to train it and then turn around how quickly it was able to identify what kinds of fish these actually were. And I was going for the low hanging fruit. So I took pictures of the fish from a book, and then I took a really good picture of one of my fish that matched the picture in the book, and it identified it right away. But
yeah,
curious to play with this a bit more, and I don't know, it'd be kind of cool to see how to identify Lego parts.
That sounds really cool. Gotta give that a shot.
Yeah, but then we saw Yina Arenas take the stage, somebody we're good friends with, and do an absolutely epic demo on with PowerPoint, the translation service.
Yeah, that was really impressive. Really, really impressive. So yeah, she was showing an example where in PowerPoint, you're doing a presentation in one language, and the translation services, there was an add-in for PowerPoint that hooked up to translation services in Azure and was doing the speech to text, but also translating from one language to another. So I think she was speaking in Spanish and it was translating to English. And then Harry Shum, who was one of the Microsoft execs there, came up and demoed not just presenter to audience, but that you could have the audience ask questions in different languages and then have it translate back. So he asked it a question in Chinese and Mandarin, I think. And had it translate back as well off his phone back to the presenter. So really nice example of the smarts, AI smarts and translation, but also hooking into a productivity scenario in Office.
Yeah, agree. I love how, I mean, yeah, she presented in Spanish. It translated both on the fly to English, closed captioning, and then it also translated to his phone where he was connected to it. I was translating in Chinese, And then, yeah, when he recorded the question back on his phone, it showed up as English, and also for her, it showed up as Spanish, so that she could go through it. I thought as a presenter, I'm like, I'm going to go present in Belgium in 2 weeks or in a week and a half. And
yeah.
I know that there'll be some people who are not, you know, English is a second language. So it would be really nice to be able to say, you know, someone just says, hey, just, you know, go ahead and present the way that you normally feel like you want to present and get it all closed captioned. So
yeah,
that's really
slick. You and I have both done training events where, you know, workshops where we've spoken for multiple days on a particular subject to an audience that doesn't speak a stitch of English. Mm. And we've had to have translators do it. And it's really awkward as a presenter to do that if you're not used to it. And an app like this would really help.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Would. Now I just need to have like the goggles with the HoloLens to where I'm looking at someone and it's translating what they're saying on the fly.
That would be pretty smooth.
Yeah. So that was one demo. And I know she did another demo too, showing using the graph to suggest different meeting times and stuff too, which is pretty slick as well.
Yes. But. Yeah. So that was a demo with Microsoft Teams, and you know, Harry Shum was talking about conversational AI. So, you know, bringing all these things together in a productivity scenario for a useful scenario. And the example they showed was Microsoft Teams, and then, you know, working with different people and so forth, and then using the graph to go find people, talking off to LinkedIn to go find information, you know, people with particular skills in your network and suggesting them for jobs, and then booking meetings through the graph and creating calendar appointments and stuff. Really sort of tied together an interesting scenario for people that, you know, are in businesses. And the majority of people at Build are in businesses, right? They're developers at particular companies. And so, you know, I've had a pet peeve in the past that all the bot scenarios that we've seen from Microsoft over the last 12 months have seemingly mostly been consumer scenarios. And I was really impressed that they finally pulled finger and got a decent enterprise scenario with Teams together. So that was really great to see.
Yeah, it really was. It was a good thing. But
and they announced the bot framework channel for Skype for Business, finally.
Oh, really? I didn't see. I missed that part. That's big for you guys. I know you've been waiting for something like that.
We have been waiting. We have some bot stuff for Skype for Business, but let's just say it's suboptimal in terms of its implementation. And we've actually been waiting to refactor it on the bot framework. The Skype for Business bot channel has been sort of a critical component to that. So the guys back in the office at Hyperfish will be furiously pulling their bits and pieces together to go play with that.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yeah. Well, that's pretty much a wrap on everything that we saw during the keynote today. I know that, you know, me personally, I was very impressed by. I think my big things that we saw today were stuff that is applicable today that could be used today that was not that wasn't stuff to me that was, you know, it was, I guess, what do you say? It wasn't like just so far-fetched and feel like I couldn't leverage this stuff today. I mean, the fact that I could go right out and I could start training images to be able to classify different types of tropical fish, that was impressive. The Project Emma was very impressive to me. And then the stuff about the translation service that you know, using the PowerPoint extension, the demo that Ian Arenas did. And I know Richard DeZerga had a lot of stuff to do with that as well. In the background to actually, you know, implement the demo and stuff. And I know he was the ghost behind the scenes, you know, while they were doing the demo. I know he was mirroring everything that was going on in the back and stuff. But overall, I was very impressed and looking forward to really, you know, of course, I really wish that they would have announced the spare time preview mode so that I could start playing with stuff without, you know, having to impact the day-to-day stuff that I have to do today. But still very, very cool, the stuff that they did. But hey, I think that's everything that we wanted to cover today. So if everyone just stay tuned, we got some more stuff that we're going to be covering this week for the podcast for covering up Microsoft Build. So with that, CJ, thanks a lot, and I will talk to you soon.
Give CodeShip Pro a try. More teams than ever are using Docker and Linux for their .NET applications.
CodeShip Pro is a fully customizable continuous integration and delivery service in the cloud with the best support for any team that is using .NET and Docker together and can run builds on Linux environments. CodeShip Pro comes with ready-to-use integrations for Azure, including Azure Container Service and more. It also offers a free, convenient local CLI tool that allows you to run your builds locally and is the only hosted CI/CD tool that lets you build your own environment, giving you the most control and flexibility no matter what tool or stack you're trying to use. Check out CodeShip Pro's free plan that grants 100 builds per month, unlimited projects, and unlimited users. Open source projects are always free on CodeShip. Visit CodeShip.com today or check out CodeShip.com/features/pro to learn more.
Did you like this episode? Please tweet about it and drop a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show, and we'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or an MP3, and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is brought to you by Keith Ritchie. For more information on Keith's music, head to music.kritchie.com. You can subscribe to us in iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for the Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter, at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading over to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.